support the much beleaguered United States Postal Service by mailing your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Every donation is very much appreciated and helps us continue to bring you all the grassroots, independent, and one-of-a-kind programming that you love. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are out of time today. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gillen.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, going now until December 31st.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with Mary and Jean, who are going to tell us a little bit about their story of visiting people who are incarcerated and also visiting people on death row. So Mary and Jean, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So you all travel here to the U.S. from the U.K.
Yes.
Regularly to visit people who are incarcerated on death row. Is that correct?
Yeah. This is our 30th anniversary this year of coming over to visit on death row.
In Nashville,
particularly. 1994 is when we first started.
Wow, so you've been doing this for 30 years. What motivated you to start visiting people on death row?
Well, there was a program on television, and it was a young black man who was, English teacher was writing to from the UK, and he was executed. And at the end of the program, it said, if anyone would like to write to someone on death row, get in touch with Lifelines, which is the name of the organization. And 2,000 people responded to that message. And mm-hmm. They've never had as many people before or since, but my sister and I both responded without each other knowing. until later that we'd both applied to write to someone on death row in America.
So it was a program you saw on television,
yeah,
that encouraged you to write to people on death row.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, okay. And neither of you knew that the other one had done it, but you both
No, mm-hmm. Not till later.
It was just not till later. Someone, we were in company, and someone said, "Oh, have you done anything interesting this week?" And I said, "Well, I said I watched this program, and I, have asked for a pen friend on death row." And of course, Mary said, "I did that as well." You know, so we both had done it at the same time, not knowing that each of us had done it. And mm-hmm. then we got, I got a pen friend in Riverbend in Nashville, David Miller. And I started writing to him. He was given to me as a pen friend. And I asked him if there was someone else that Mary could write to. And he said, no, he didn't trust anyone, so he said she could write to him too. So we both wrote to David Miller, and mm-hmm. he was the first one we visited on death row, and that was
93 was when we joined, but 94 is when we visited. Came over. Yeah.
Now, how did you get from writing to someone on death row to visiting them? I mean, that's a big step.
Well, that was Mary, really. She said, do you think we should visit him? And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And Nashville was quite appealing to me because I love country music and all that. So we did. And the thing was, we, after we'd visited, we sort of said, well, Mary said, really, we can't stop doing this now, because he was so overjoyed to get a visit. He didn't get any visits at all. And we just couldn't, you know, say, oh, bye-bye. You know, we've visited you once. Mm-hmm. So we came we came about every 18 months first. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then, of course,
and we came twice in 2018, because that was when he got executed.
Yeah.
He was executed.
Yeah, Mary came on her own in 2018 in
March.
Because I had said that I was getting too old to travel, and I didn't really want to go. You know, I had said to David, I don't think I'll be coming back. But then he got an execution date, and I thought, no, you know, can't do this to him. We have to go back. So we both went back in November of 2018. So Mary had actually visited him twice in that year. Yeah. But I mean, Mary's visited lots of other death rows. Mm-hmm. I've only visited, you know, Riverbend. It was in the visiting room when we visited David in the November. Well, Mary had met
the person that we visited today, Michael. I met him when I visited David in March 2018, and then Jean saw him in the visiting room with a friend of his was visiting. So we saw him, and then his friend asked if we would send him Christmas cards that year, and then it sort of snowballed from that, really, into writing. And Jean has been having phone calls. He phones Jean once a week.
Oh, wow. What does a visit with somebody on death row look like? I mean, do you sit on two sides of a desk and talk, or what do you do?
Well, Mary's visited quite a few death rows, but in Nashville, it's just like there is three seats in a row. So you're all sitting in a row. But what Michael does is he gets a chair and puts it in front of us. So there's two of us sitting together in the seats, and then he'll sit facing us. But there's no table or anything. It's just, it's quite, I mean, it's, you know, it's contact visits, you know. You're not supposed to, obviously, you can hug at the beginning and hug at the end, but
there's no touching at all.
Yeah. Although when we visited David, he used to hold our hands the whole visit. So it's changed in the 30 years that we've been coming.
There's quite a lot of change. Like, you're not allowed to wear dangly earrings. You're not allowed to wear necklaces or bracelets. You're not allowed to wear a watch, which you could do previously. So they've tightened up the regulation.
Now, could you all understand each other? I mean, him being from Tennessee and all being from the UK.
Yeah. But, okay. I mean, there's a lot of people this time who I can't understand because he speaks so quick or drawl, you know. But
because when we were there, Michael was introducing us to everybody. He even brought people out from, you know, that hadn't visits to introduce us to them. This is my friend so-and-so, this is my friend so-and-so. And a lot of them, I couldn't understand what they were saying. They were much, I don't know why. Maybe I'm just used to talking to him, I don't know. But we could understand him.
Well, tell me a little bit about the first person that you visited. I mean, tell me a little bit about his story so we can... David. You know, kind of share a memory of David, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that he was very badly abused by his mother.
He didn't say much, really, did he?
He said quite a lot at the beginning, you know, he spoke, because we could do tapes at the beginning. We were able to send music tapes and talking tapes, and he could talk, and he talked on those tapes about his family, like his grandfather. He spoke about his grandfather. I think he had a good relationship with his grandfather, but he didn't have a very good relationship at home. And I think a lot of people that we've met haven't had good relationships as children. There's been a lot of abuse in a lot of cases. And a lot of people are mentally ill that are in prison. So they should actually be there.
Yeah, he was on death row for 37 years. He was the longest-serving death row prisoner. Well, I don't know if it was just in Tennessee, but
I think it was in Tennessee.
Yeah, 37 years. It's a long time to keep someone, you know, in not knowing when they're going to get executed. It's torture.
Because he did try to kill himself at one time. And then because he did that, he was not allowed contact visits for a year. So he was punished.
Did he try to kill himself like while you knew him, or was before you knew him?
We knew
he tried to slit his throat. He phoned, because he used to phone a couple of times, and he told us on the phone that he'd tried to slit his throat. He said he wasn't even successful at that, you know. But no, after that, they medicated him a lot as well, and he was never the same, you know. It was terrible.
So by the time that you met David, he had already been on death row for like 13 or 14 years. Because then he was on death row for another
24 years.
Yeah, because we visited for 24 years.
Yeah, we visited for 24 years.
And so he's been on death row for 13 years.
Yes.
What's it like for someone on death row? I mean, what is their life like?
Boring. Not just boring, but at the moment they're changing people. Like, they're not allowed to stay in the cell more than 30 days. So they move them around all the time. So they can't get used to one environment. That's what they're doing at the moment in this one.
Does Tennessee have a lot of people on death row?
I'm not sure now how many there are at the moment.
What other places do you go to where you visit people on?
Well, I did visit in San Quentin, but I don't know if you know that all the prisoners in San Quentin have been relocated to other prisons. And I'm on a getting out app that I can text and send photos. So I write quite a few, or I'm on this app with quite a few there. And it's very difficult because if you've been in a single cell for 30 years and then you have to share with another person, it's quite hard to adjust to that. I mean, there's pros and cons, like they're not shackled as much as they were, because Governor Newsom, you know, has caused this to happen.
What's it now? What's it like going into a maximum? I mean, what's it like going down to death row? Describe it to me.
Well, you have to go through.
It's a machine.
A machine. They go through to see if you make anything you're wearing sets the alarm off, and then here in Riverbend, you are put onto this machine, which I think X-rays you. You move across slowly. They never used to have that machine, but that sort of tells them if you've got any contraband or anything. And then they stamp your hand, and then they used to pat you down, because they've got that machine, they don't do that anymore. Then you have to go through gates, electric gates, and then if you're going to death row, you have to be escorted by a guard. So you go through past the general population, and then you go back outside into another area, but you have to be escorted there and escorted back out.
It's pretty high security, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah.
What in your own personal life, I mean, really, I mean, you told me about the television show, I understand that, but I mean, is there anything else that, I mean, a lot of people have seen television shows, but I mean, is there anything in your personal life that really motivated you to start visiting people on death row?
Well,
or was it a religious conviction?
Well, for me, I think when I was 8 years old, I went to the zoo, and I wrote a poem about this wolf I saw pacing up and down this cage, and I thought that wasn't natural for a wolf to be stuck in a cage, and and I don't think a human being should be stuck in a cage either.
I was very young when a young guy was hanged in Britain, you know, because we had hanging.
The last person who was hanged in Britain was in 1964. The death penalty was abolished in 1969.
So it was just, I'd read the paper, and he was only 17 or 18. I can't remember what the youngest age you could hang someone was. And I was only very young. And I remember reading it in the paper and thinking, oh, that is so horrific. You know, this young life being, you know, taken, you know, like that. So there was things that happened. And then my husband actually went to prison it was only for a year, but I visited him, and he asked me if I would visit this young guy who couldn't speak English. It was a terrible story, but he was prison. He hadn't done anything, but he was in prison. And I started writing to him and visiting him. And I think it was, you know, after that as well, when I saw this program, you know, did you want to write to someone on death row? That rang a bell. You know, I thought, well, yeah, because I really, you know, not saying enjoyed, but, you know, I suppose enjoyed writing to this young guy. And I'd helped him, you know, because mm-hmm. he didn't have anybody. And I thought yeah. it'd be a good thing to do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really touching. And you maintained a relationship with David for 24 years.
Mm.
How did it feel when he was executed?
Yeah, it was...
Well, I still think about him. I've got a bath mat that he made. So I think about him often. And sometimes I even dream about him, which is interesting. But, you know, I think your beliefs help you if you believe that death is not the end.
mm-hmm.
But just a change of state.
Mm-hmm. It was strange, I think, visiting this time, because we weren't visiting David, because this is the first time that we've gone to Riverbend and it hasn't been David, it was Michael. And when he walked in, I just thought it was David. You know, it was weird because he's, well, just the same, you know, the uniform. He had no hair, a beard. You know, he looked very similar to David. Mm-hmm. And it was just that split second that he walked in, I got this feeling that it was David. It was weird, you know. Very strange.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's just such a really touching story. I mean, do you get any help to do this? I mean, how do you pay for it?
We just come on holiday, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean,
my birthday as well. So
yeah, Mary wanted to come to Nashville for her 80th birthday. She actually spent her 80th birthday.
I spent my 80th birthday in prison. I said to people, I'm going to prison for my birthday, which I did, and we had a cheesecake out of the machine, and the three of us sort of had a spork that we both shared.
The birthday cake.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Are you visiting people? Are you visiting anyone else on this visit?
No.
Just to Riverbend?
Yeah. I mean, we do video. Gene's pen pal was exonerated this year.
Yeah, he was in death row in Pennsylvania. And he was on death row for 30 years, and he just got exonerated this year. So that was amazing. You know, it was all in the news. Well, I watched it online, obviously, and him walking out of prison and getting into a taxi, and I thought, how is he feeling? You know, it must be such, he's doing all right. I mean, he still keeps in touch. I mean, he's doing a lot of, you know, work with talking to people about his experience. And, you know, there's a lot of that going on in his life at the moment, which is which is good. Yeah.
What do you think it would take to end the death penalty in the United States? I mean, how did it end in the UK? Are all the countries in the UK, did they all abolish the death penalty, or was it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Europe doesn't have the death penalty. Norway's prisons are the best in the world. They treat them like human beings.
Have you been to a prison in Norway?
No, but I've seen videos of it, and how, yeah. I mean, they've got huge big windows that you can look out at the forest and nature, and they have a shop where they can buy food and make their own food, and, you know, even murderers are, you know, people, you don't know what people have done. They're just mixed. and the guards wear the same clothes as the prisoners, and the guards have to go on a 2-year training course and study different, like psychiatry and stuff like that. You know, they have to have a greater depth of understanding.
That's nice. I mean, why do you think the United States is still executing people?
Well, that's a good question.
I know. That's a very difficult question.
Because we do go on the vigils, you know, death penalty action has vigils for every single person who is being executed. There was one on Thursday in Alabama where he was given nitrogen gas. But I don't know what it will take.
Death penalty action, you know, goes to practically every execution, holds vigils. I mean, they're really fighting it, aren't they? They're trying to get Biden to, commute the death sentence. I don't know the words of it, but they're trying to get him to let out all the federal death row prisoners. So because he's got the power to do that before he goes out of office. So I mean, they're fighting very hard to end the death penalty, but it's I don't know. It's a very difficult thing for everyone to. I mean, it's such a big country.
Well, there isn't a death row in every state.
No, that's what I mean. It's, you know, but it's such a big country. You know, a lot of states don't have it, and it's just hoping that other states will follow their lead. You know, but it's difficult.
I think the financial situation of it. You know, it costs a lot of money to keep someone on death row. I mean, that might be an argument against it because of the financial side of it.
Yeah, that would definitely make a big difference. Yeah. What do people say back in the UK when you go back and you tell them about your story? I mean, do they think that the United States is just this backwater, backwards kind of?
Well, they can't understand why America is the way it is, because it's like a third world country where, you know, have the death penalty.
Well, I really hope that the death penalty ends very soon all around the country.
Yes.
What do they do in England with people who commit murder? I mean, do they just keep them in prison for their whole life?
Patrick McGee, who killed, he got 13 years. It depends. So I think if someone kills children, they get more.
Can get life.
It's possible to have life, but not very many have life.
It has to be really, you know, some sort of serial killer or something, you know, to get life.
There aren't, like, people in Europe generally don't have all the guns that Americans have.
I mean, one thing. We don't have guns.
There's just guns everywhere in this country. Yeah. So it's pretty easy to kill somebody if you have a gun.
Yes, it's a lot easier. It is. I mean, we have stabbings. We have quite a lot of stabbings. But you can survive a stabbing, for one. You can sort of fight a little bit off a stabbing. There still are, you know, stabbings. But a gun is such a, you know, fatal instrument that
I can't see America ever giving up guns.
No, and they won't give up guns, will they?
Well, Mary and Jean, it's really been great talking to you today for Prison Pipeline. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
KBOO's 2024 Catalog of Connections is hot off the presses.